Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. While my Blackhawks got to go to the White House to honor their Stanley Cup victory last week, the third time they've gone with Chicagoan Barack Obama as president, something that Obama quickly noted after a 50-year cup drought. Team owner Rocky Wirtz had a gift for the president that was more than just your usual presidential hawk sweater. It was, as we all know, it's all about the parking.
We also want you to know is maybe you're spending, as you said, a little more time away from the White House in years to come. And so while you're driving yourself around Chicago, we thought that we might want to present you with something that is near and dear to our house heart, and that's a parking pass for the United Center. It's not only good for Blackhawk games, it's for any event, the United Center, for you and your family. So on behalf of the organization, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Can I just say, this is the best gift I've ever gotten at the White House. This is really cool. You'd pay for this, wouldn't you? Absolutely. Quigley, I might sell this on eBay.
That was the president, and it was the parking pass actually has the presidential seal on it, too. So, the best gift you could ever get. I mean, if you're a sports fan at the United Center, it's all about the parking. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is my Tribune colleague from our political team, Kim Geiger. And Kim was in Springfield last week as Governor Bruce Rauner delivered his budget address. And the first thing that struck me is that after, one, presenting a budget while we still don't have a budget, and two, is that after railing against Democrats and basically vetoing the budget that they sent him last year because it was $4 billion out of whack, he came up with a budget plan that's $3.5 billion out of whack. Or as much as $5 billion.
Right, yeah. So basically what the governor did this time around was he said, hey, Democrats, I don't want to work with you to pass a tax increase to close this budget hole unless you agree to pass my turnaround legislative agenda. So what I'm going to do is tell you we could spend $32.8 billion or we could spend $36.3 billion, and there's a $3.5 billion hole there, and you decide if you want to work with me on making the cuts.
But we're basically still, we're back to, this is Groundhog Day again, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much the exact same situation that we were in last year. The difference is that last year what he did was he actually put out a budget document that spelled out how he would make the cuts. The problem is that the governor can't just make those cuts on his own. He needs the legislature to pass legislation that does it. And because of this other fight that's going on at the Capitol, what happened was Democrats just passed their own legislation that didn't make the cuts that he wanted, and then he turned around and vetoed it. And here we are 8 months later without a budget.
And so he presents two choices. He says, we can go the higher level, but I need my turnaround agenda. And, of course, that turnaround agenda, and he says he doesn't need everything all at once.
Right. He's now saying that. And he also said, it doesn't have to be exactly what it looks like right now. But he didn't say what he was willing to budge on or.
Right. And as we have seen in various legislative proposals that he has presented, they still come down to these kind of union weakening positions, pro-business union weakening positions that Democrats aren't going to move on.
Right. He wants to freeze property taxes, but he wants to do that while also limiting collective bargaining rights for unions that bargain with the public. He wants to create set term limits. He wants redistricting reform. He wants tort reform. He wants workers' comp changes. These are all things that kind of go at the heart of the Democratic power base, so they're difficult to pass just on their own. And then on top of that, it's now linked to the budget. We're already 8 months in without a budget, and things are kind of chugging along.
By court order.
Yeah.
And primarily by court order.
Right.
So there's that choice of go with what I've laid out in my turnaround agenda, or give me unprecedented authority,
yes,
and I'll make the cuts.
Right.
Which
yes,
he doesn't want to do.
No.
I mean, he does not want to wear the jacket for these cuts. And so, and the way that this legislation was presented, which would circumvent all kinds of laws, it, quite frankly, wouldn't require the statutory payment to the state pension systems, with the pensions being one of the drivers of state spending and why we're in this kind of budget mess.
Right, right. It would allow him to skip pension payments if he wanted to. It would also allow him to do things like not pay members of the legislature whose salaries are currently going out the door automatically because they're written into state law. So there's just a lot of things in there that the Democratic majority is unlikely to be like, oh, yeah, here, you can have the authority to do this. Go ahead.
And frankly, that's what Democrats in some respects tried a year ago in sending that unbalanced budget, was let him use his authority for what's called a line item or reduction veto,
right,
which allows him to, you know, take down amounts in the budget or zero out items in the budget. Mm-hmm. And of course, Democrats are arguing, you want this unprecedented law that would circumvent all these other laws when you have the power of the veto to reduce lines. You can do that already.
Right. But his administration is arguing that when he got that budget, really, because there are so many existing laws and court orders that are requiring money to go out the door, that really his options for what he could veto were limited to K-12 education, which he has said he's not willing to cut spending on that, and then human services, which leading up to when he vetoed that budget, there were months and months and months of a lot of frustration and concern about human services spending already. So he would have been in the position of having to like take billions and billions of dollars out of an already precarious financial situation for human services.
Well, and you know, already, and looking at their budget book and looking ahead too, and you have the effects of Obamacare, 2017, I think the budget year ahead, it marks the first kind of phased reduction of federal support for,
right,
Obamacare.
Yeah.
We go from 100% support to 95%.
Yeah. Medicaid expenses are going up for the state going forward. Yeah. And he had proposed in his first budget, he had proposed cutting Medicaid spending. But that he needs the legislature to go along with that, and they didn't. And so in this one, when he's asking for these broad authorities, one of the things he's asking for is essentially the ability to cut Medicaid spending
and
on his own.
And cut rates, reimbursement rates,
yep,
to hospitals, mm-hmm, and care providers,
yes,
as
which
well.
Which is not a popular thing to do.
No. We've got a call from John. John, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning to you. Question I have is, Governor Rotter in a position basically to put out what I would call a poison pill? He has had to make certain state mandated payments. Can he basically tell the legislature, if you do not get a budget done by June 30th, state funding of education will not happen?
Well,
I will fund what has to be mandated by, like, for prisons, hospitals, state police, the pensions. But is this one of those items that the court cannot make them do it? And basically tell them, either you get a budget done or nobody's going to be going to school next year, and you guys explain that to the people of Illinois.
All right, John, thank you for your question. And we know from last budget, the only part of the budget that he approved was the K-12
right
portion of the budget.
Yeah, so he has the ability to say, I won't sign that portion of the budget, although it's unlikely that he's going to get a clean, straight
well, and he has,
bill for that this year.
And that's what he's asked for this time.
Yeah.
Just a clean education budget bill.
Right, so it's unlikely that he's going to get that. But and he could go ahead and veto it if he wanted. The thing is that this governor has said that that's something that he's not going to do. So that's not really a leverage point for him unless he were to do a complete 180 and completely change his entire sort of philosophy.
And quite frankly, by him saying that he wanted a clean education budget, what he's likely to get is the entire state budget,
yes,
in that education bill.
That education,
yes,
bill. Yeah,
yes.
It's very, very unlikely that he's going to get that. But yeah, that's not a leverage point that I think that he would use. You know, and last year, human services spending was one of those potential leverage points. And even then, he kind of showed that he wasn't really actually interested in following through on, like, deep cuts to human services. That's the kind of stuff where people get really upset and a lot of people get hurt. And it's hard to actually put that into place.
We're speaking with my Tribune colleague, Kim Geiger. She's here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Kim Geiger, a member of the political team at the Chicago Tribune. And Kim was in Springfield last week for Governor Rauner's second budget address, a budget address despite the fact that we don't have a budget to begin with. We've got a call from George. George, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to your program, and what really aggravated me was the fact that, you know, the legislature and the governor and everybody, they're all getting paid for not doing their job. It'd be like me, you know, not going to work and getting paid. You know, sitting around in Congress and not doing what they're supposed to be doing is not what I consider going to work.
All right, George. Well, a couple of things. One, we should point out the governor says he's not taking his salary.
Yeah.
He's turning back his salary. Two, you have basically by constitution as well as by state law, lawmakers have to get paid.
Right. And the reason for that is so that disputes like this between the two branches of government can't be used to hurt lawmakers financially. Like, you don't really want that to be, you don't want people making decisions that are big decisions for the entire state based off of whether or not they're going to get their paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Quinn tried that, and the courts ruled that you can't reduce a lawmaker's salary during their term, constitutionally.
You can't use it as leverage. Like, hey, if you don't vote this way, then I'm going to cut your pay.
But I mean, George is reflecting the frustration that a lot of people have again, we're Groundhog Day 366. There is no movement. And you had the Democratic leaders summarily reject what the governor proposed. And indeed, you know, there. Yes, I looked at the budget book and all that, but when we talked about this $3.5 billion hole, I mean, it's basically right there in the budget book. Like, well, compromise and we'll fix it.
Right. Yes, it's pretty clearly spelled out. I mean, it's not as clearly spelled out as it was last year when the governor was very clear. Like, this is what I would cut. This is what I would cut. Now he's just like, hey, this is this big hole. We all know about it. Come to the table and negotiate this with me. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. And part of the function of politics is getting things done, but part of it is also resisting. It depends on where you sit at the negotiating table, but that's a fairly standard thing that happens. It happens here. It happens in Washington. It happens everywhere.
And, of course, here we are in an election year.
Yeah,
so the stakes are even higher. And to me, I would argue that it's exponentially more difficult to try to fix things in this election year. Even if an agreement was reached, trying to get the votes for a tax increase would be extremely difficult.
Who wants to raise taxes in an election year?
And of course, you have Rauner saying, well, Democrats have their veto-proof majority. If they want to raise taxes, they can do it.
But they don't really.
But because of Representative Ken Duncan, who's kind of defected from the Democratic side and is allied with Bruce Rauner, they don't effectively have that 71-vote veto-proof majority in the House. Yeah. And also, politically, an election year, Democrats are not going to be the only ones to vote on a tax.
Yeah, I mean, even Senate President John Cullerton, who his supermajority is much stronger than Mike Madigan's, even he has said, like, we're not doing that on our own. In fact, we're not even willing to set whatever the tax rate would be. The governor's going to have to decide how much the tax is going to be, and then, you know, we'll approve it.
Well, and also trying to pin a tax increase on the Republican governor.
Yeah, nobody wants to wear a tax increase right now. And the thing is, the way that things are going, for the most part, you know, you had all of these court interventions that came in and allowed money to continue being spent. Those things continue no matter how many budget years we go through. So most of state government, the money's going out. What you're really looking at is colleges and universities and some areas of the human social services.
And as we've seen already a warning from Catholic Charities,
right.
We've seen the cutbacks from Lutheran Social Services. The safety net is
starting to kind of fall apart. But the question is the pain like enough for anybody to move? And it doesn't look like it.
We've got a call from Sally. Sally, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I just wanted to disagree with the last caller when he said the legislature wasn't working or they weren't earning their money. They're working. They're there every day as they're supposed to be. They're just not producing results. I just wanted to throw that in. Also, at what point do you think the American public or the Illinois public will get to when they start a recall, some type of recall effort? And my third question is, can they do a two-year budget and just get everything out of the way 2 years, you know, so we don't have to keep repeating this every year? I mean, is there anything in the Constitution that says you have to have a yearly budget?
All right, Sally, thank you very much. Well, one, if there's a budget agreement, it will be a two-year budget because they're going to have to deal with the backlog of bills.
Right.
From this year, and I forget what number that's estimated to rise up to, probably $8 billion backlog of bills. So, no, there's nothing that prohibits that. And, in fact, in a number of states, that's what they do is do a two-year budget. So, effectively, that's kind of what we would be dealing with. As far as a recall, given there is a provision to allow, a constitutional provision that allows for recall of the governor. However, it requires being signed off on by legislators in both parties.
Right.
It was basically kind of a recognition, a post-Rod Blagojevich kind of thing that was put in. But effectively, under the recall provision as it's written, it's virtually impossible to recall somebody unless they were to be arrested and convicted the way that Rod Blagojevich is. Although, you know, there's been talk about changing that and expanding recall to have
right.
it affect legislators, mayors.
Right.
Obviously, you know, the issue with Mayor Rahm Emanuel, although I have to say I'm not sure that legislation is going anywhere either.
No, and in terms of what they're required to do budget-wise, the governor is required to give a budget proposal, and the General Assembly is required to send him something. Those things happened.
And they're both supposed to be balanced.
And neither of them were. So, yeah.
That's
the situation.
And that's why we sit still in this
yes.
fiscal mess.
Yes.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.